welcome to episode 8 of Checking the Gate of Film and Religion podcast. I am Robert Wright Stasko.
And I am Michael M. Patty.
And on today's episode, we'll be looking at two movies. The first one we'll look at is Kevin Smith's new movie, Red State, which is available on a variety of formats, DVD, Blu-ray, download, streaming. And the second movie we'll be looking at is Godzilla, Mothra, King Ghidorah, Giant Monsters All-Out Attack, which you can find on DVD from Sony. And I believe it's been on a few times on one of the Starz networks. So if you haven't had a chance to catch that, you might be able to do so still. So first off, we're going to talk about Red State, which we had the rare opportunity to watch together the last time we recorded the last episode. So Mike, what did you think about Red State?
Well, I have to start out with a little bit of a disclaimer. Red State, it was not the movie I thought it was going to be. I was led to believe it was going to be a slasher film in the vein of Saw or Texas Chainsaw Massacre with religious fundamentalists instead of a crazy person. I am not sure where I heard that. I must have either heard or read incorrectly. That's not what the movie is about. The movie is broken down into essentially three segments. Religious fundamentalists are a big part of it. And there is even a horror aspect to it. A couple of high school kids find an online hookup posting, kind of like Craigslist, in their town. And they decide to all go together to, I think they think they're going to have a four-way with a hot chick. And it turns out it's a trap to kidnap people that the religious fundamentalists believe are depraved souls. I'd like to point out it seems lost on them that these kids would not have done anything depraved if they hadn't been tempted. But that's not brought up in the movie, so
there's a lot of things that the fundamentalists do wrong here, but we'll get to that a little more later. Keep going.
At the risk of giving away the whole plot, the kids are kidnapped, and somehow in the course of the movie, the cops come looking for them. One cop ends up getting killed, and it leads to a standoff and a shootout reminiscent of Waco in 1993. It ends up in a debriefing of John Goodman's character. It doesn't end up being a horror movie. It is very unsettling and disturbing. I was uncomfortable. That's the best word for it.
Yeah.
I was uncomfortable watching the movie because I thought it was going to be unrealistic, and it ended up not being unrealistic, and it was something that I know has happened in real life.
Yeah, it was very much a typical Kevin Smith movie, where there's not a whole lot of action and a lot more talking. And I was expecting this to be like an Eli Roth film, too. But there's only a few actual disturbing violence. And it's
over by the second act.
Yeah, and it's mostly people getting shot in the head.
Yeah.
And that probably happens like four times. So it wasn't anything over-the-top violence. But there's always that threat that it could be. And I think that that tension level is what we felt the more, like in a classic horror movie where it's mostly the
like
setup.
A disaster film.
Yeah, it's mostly the setup and the atmosphere that makes it unsettling. Like after the kids get kidnapped, there's a kid in a cage and he's wheeled on to the front part of the sanctuary, like the altar part, and
Is in the church where they take their kidnapped victims.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like their church, their compound. The main character, the leader of the fundamentalists, the character's name is Avon Cooper, is giving a sermon, and he's preaching to his very small cult-like people, and he starts off making sense. In fact, the first few minutes of the sermon he's given is many points I've heard in Sunday church myself, and that's what sort of makes it unsettling, is okay, there's a kid in a cage here. And then there's another guy who's like saran wrapped to a cross, and you're like, what's this all about? And just when you think he's going to make a decent point, he hits this non sequitur.
I'm not going to quote verbatim here, but let's kind of reenact it. Who is to blame for all of society's ills today?
It's the homosexuals, Father.
we were both kind of taken aback at that point in the movie, like, because
where did that come from?
There, I'd like to speak from personal experience. Homosexuals have never done me wrong at all, so I love my gay brethren. Props.
I have several friends that, you know, they're in homosexual relationships and they're very happy and they're very nice people. And I think that the church has really treated homosexuals poorly and sidelined them.
I'd also like to give a shout out to my former Catholic church who did preach love to homosexuals. He said very clearly, we must love, and he said forgive, but, you know, the message was there.
Yeah.
Don't be down.
Yeah, a lot of the proof texts that people use for ridiculing the homosexual lifestyle comes from, like, Leviticus.
Yeah, there's, like, one sentence.
Yeah, and there's other things that we do, like, well, we still don't wear clothes that are only made out of one type of cloth. You know, you can't sew, like, linen and cotton together.
Yeah.
That was a no-no. It's the idea of being set apart and holy. You want to be whole, like, your whole tunic is made out of one cloth. And it was a kind of religious imagery that kind of went down to every aspect of your life.
So it made sense at the time.
God wanted Israel to be a nation of priests that all the world will come to, and we all know how that turned out. It didn't even come close, but God had to try. So as modern-day Christians, Jesus came and gave us a new covenant where we didn't have to abide by the total law which God had given before. He's like, I'm the fulfillment of the law, so all you have to do is, you know, believe in me. Yet we still shouldn't, like, kill people. You know,
right.
Like those Ten Commandments, I think it's a major law which he's fulfilling, which we still want to fulfill ourselves today. But, you know, all those other, like, these hedge laws and stuff, and all the, like, all the stuff in Leviticus, like, you know, don't touch a woman till 8 days after her period. I don't think that.
That was, you know.
That kind of stuff is not.
That is somebody who wrote the Bible 2,000 or however many years. I'm not a biblical scholar. That's Robert. One person didn't like that and wrote it down, and it got picked up and blown out of proportion.
The fundamentalists nowadays, they look at all the Bible being literally true.
Like Ned Flanders said, even the stuff that contradicts the other stuff.
Yeah. So it's very difficult when you look at it that way. You have to pick and choose. And when you start picking and choosing, that gets you into trouble. And that's, I think, the crux of the problem in this movie, is they got themselves into big trouble.
I'm pretty sure one of the Ten Commandments, again, I'm not a biblical scholar, I'm pretty sure one of the commandments is, thou shalt not kidnap and saran wrap people who didn't do anything to you and kill them and then go protest their funeral.
Yeah. Well, Jesus said, love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you.
What about before you go and pluck out the mote in someone else's eye, look for the one in thine own?
Yes. Exactly. You're exactly right. Again, it's being selective. It gets very dangerous when you use your faith as sort of a measuring stick for all of society and everyone else instead of yourself.
This really goes back to what we were talking about in our last episode on the Book of Eli. People will use whatever they want to justify their violence and their own personal crusades.
Yeah, you know what's very disturbing is you think this might be a movie, and even though the movie takes its inspiration from Fred Phelps and the Westboro Baptist Church, which I think John Goodman references.
Yes, the name. I don't believe Westboro is mentioned, but Fred Phelps and his gang definitely are.
Yeah, and we're recording in Cleveland, Ohio, and about 50 miles south of us in, I believe it was Holmes County, Ohio, there's a recent hate crime. Did you hear about this, Mike?
Is this the beard choppings?
The beard-cutting hate crime that happened. There was a sect leader of the Amish group. The Amish are a group of separatists and pacifists.
I would like to hope our audience is educated enough to know who the Amish are.
Well, you know, there might be some listeners in Japan who are listening for the Godzilla part coming up.
Fair enough.
Like Shepherd Book, they don't cut their hair or the Or their beards, which is sort of similar
after
to...
After they get married, they stop, they grow their beards out.
Right. This sect leader had been... They say he was brainwashing people, according to the CNN article. I'll put the link up on the show notes. Samuel Mullet Sr. had been forcing people to sleep for days at a time in a chicken coop who appeared to disobey him. This is according to an FBI affidavit that he had been, quote, counseling, unquote, married women by taking them into his home.
As in biblically counseling them?
So that he can make cleanse them of the devil with acts of sexual intimacy.
What do they say? How does that work? Guys in bars are saying, hey, baby, let me buy you a drink. And this guy's saying, you know, you are impure. Let me cleanse you with my sexual healing. And it works! How?
I don't know. This is one of the arguments that the atheists will have against religion, because it allows a person to use religious ideas to say, if you want cleanliness, if you want holiness, you follow me and I will show you the way.
I've seen a picture of this guy. He does not look like George Clooney.
Yeah. Well, the point I want to make is there was a raid of about 40 officials to come and arrest this guy. So it was kind of similar to what happened at the end of the movie Red State. So you have this kind of weird thing where you have art imitating life and then life imitating art again. This happened like yesterday.
Oh, wow.
A combination of about 40 officials from various agencies, including the FBI, the U.S. Marshals Service, and the Jefferson County and Holmes County sheriffs, were involved in the raid. You watch this movie, and it did have sort of an incredulous ending.
Do we want to talk about the ending?
I thought it was funny.
All right, spoiler alert. At the end of the movie, the standoff is at its nadir, and all of a sudden, John Goodman is confronting Michael Parks' character, and all of a sudden...
The trumpet begins to sound.
And I have no idea what's going on and why everybody is just standing around looking.
They thought, you know, the end times are coming. Jesus is coming back.
Yeah, I had to ask Robert what was going on. And apparently that's what the rapture is going to be.
It's the second coming, yeah.
Yeah.
Gabriel's blowing his trumpet and they're going to be taken off. Because the FBI were going to go in and just take everybody out. They had orders to just clean up the mess and get out of there before the press show up, and no one will ever know this is going to happen. But then the trumpets start to sound, and the fundamentalists come up, and they lay down their guns, and they give up, because they figure, hey, it's time, we're going up to heaven. You know, so the fundamentalist is saying this and throwing it in John Goodman's face, and then there's, like Kevin Smith always does in his movies, he kind of does an abrupt cut, and then he talks about what happened.
Yeah.
Instead of showing us the action, we talk about it. And it is a signature Kevin Smith move. But John Goodman tells us that a bunch of college students in a neighboring combine...
It ends up not being the actual rapture, but just a joke on those guys.
Yeah,
and completely accidentally at the perfect time.
Yeah. And John Goodman took out Aben Cooper by butting him in the head. So,
which I would have loved to have seen,
even as a
cut in.
Yeah,
you know, if they had to have the abrupt cut at the debriefing, then I would have liked to have just seen a cutaway to the headbutt.
Yeah, it's sort of like the funeral scene in the original Clerks. You know, they talk about it, but I'm sure if I saw this movie again, I would think it was funnier. Because I was kind of disturbed by the first half, that humor in the last half was sort of lost on me. And it was very much a dark comedy, probably the darkest one.
Yeah,
the
humor that's
done
in there is black as night.
And in your movie with the second coming, that is kind of funny.
Having seen Dogma, I wasn't sure exactly what was going to happen. If it was actually going to be the end of the world, or if it was going to be quote-unquote realistic.
Yeah.
I genuinely wasn't sure which way he was going to go with it.
Yeah, which made the movie entertaining and a bit of a surprise. So many movies were so just redundant, and I mean, we have so many remakes and reboots, and it's all the same thing over and over again. If I see one more superhero origin story, I think I might hole myself up in a combine and start my own cult.
So we going to see Spider-Man next summer?
No.
No. I'm not sure we're done discussing the religion aspects of the film, because it's not so much about religion as about everybody's beliefs. For example, the kids believed that they were going to go out and get some nookie. So that's what drove them out to the compound in the first place. The fundamentalists, they were so devoted to their own personal brand of religion that they were willing to... I'm sure their mamas all taught them it's not nice to kidnap and kill people. I'm sure the Bible taught them that killing people was wrong. But they did it anyway, because they were so devoted to what they believed in. And John Goodman's character, he didn't want to do things the way he was told to go in and take everybody out, but he knew that that was wrong because he had heard that there were women and children who were not opening fire on them. So he did what he believed was right and did not carry that order out. I think that is the message of the movie. I don't think this movie is about, quote-unquote, again, religion.
Well, as we're going to see as we move into the next segment where we talk about the Godzilla movie, religion is a very hard word to define. Last week, we mentioned a book by William Cavanaugh, The Myth of Religious Violence, and he takes a whole chapter trying to define this one word, religion. It wasn't used until the Middle Ages, and it was used in reference to monks and what they do. And so we kind of use it kind of loosely when we talk about church. Like, are you a religious person? Meaning, do you go to church or do you not go to church? If you ask that to maybe someone from Southeast Asia, are you religious? That might mean a whole different thing, as we'll talk about. So here we're talking about a system of beliefs. Does that entail an entire religion? Maybe not. You look at John Goodman's character, he doesn't look like a religious person. But his character behaves more in tune with what is mainstream Christian ideals. You know, don't kill, protect the weak, protect the innocent. And that's not what the people who claim to be Christian are doing. They're doing the complete opposite of that. They're harming innocent people. They're going out of their way to ensnare and kill innocent people. So you're right. It's what's our belief and how do we, what's the right way that we act on our beliefs? Now, we're going to turn to Godzilla, Mothra, King Ghidorah, giant monsters all out attack.
I do not have the title of this movie memorized.
This is one of the better Godzilla movies that have come out in recent times.
I will say, as a non-Godzilla fan, I was entertained and kept interested. It has a very Western feel. It does not feel like some of the other Japanese movies I've seen, where I've been lost as to what's going on because of the cultural differences.
Yeah.
I didn't have that problem in this movie, and the lead actress was cute, and that helped. I liked at the very beginning how they made it clear exactly what was canon in the film. The original Godzilla.
And that's it.
And sort of the New York one, the Matthew Broderick one. That happened, but it wasn't necessarily Godzilla.
Yeah, I like that. What is it? The guy says, well, the Americans say it was Godzilla, but I'm not so sure.
Right.
We're not so sure either here in America.
We could go on about that, but this isn't, again, this isn't Kaiju Cast, so we're not going to.
Yeah. When you watched this movie, you said to me, well, where's the religious element?
I must have missed something. I didn't fall asleep during it, and maybe it was lost in the translation, but I wasn't sure after I was done watching it what aspects of religion were in it. There was like one passing reference to the spirits of the fallen in World War II that they had forgotten, and now Godzilla was being brought back to punish them for having forgotten the sins that were committed. But that was it. That was a throwaway line, and so I'm looking forward to hearing your justification.
But just for doing this movie on a religion podcast, other
yes.
than I like Godzilla movies?
Yes.
Well, here we go. This gets back to the definition of religion. Like, we in America define religion as you get up on Sunday morning, you go to church, you pray, you sing, you come home. being a religious person in Japan might differ somewhat. The main religion there is what Westerners have labeled Shintoism. It's more of a collection of native belief systems, and there's many parts of Shintoism. There's also Buddhism and Confucianism that has come over from China and India into Japan that all kind of works together. Like here, like some person would be either Catholic or Protestant or Muslim. A Japanese person might go to a Shinto shrine where there's a waterfall and go into the waterfall and perform a cleansing ritual. But then when someone dies, they go to a Buddhist temple and they'll have a Buddhist funeral ceremony. So it's not so much like, are you this, are you that? It's just sort of a collection of spirituality. Westerners want to come in and label and classify things and, okay, that's Shintoism as opposed to Christianity. And, you know, if you look at what Shintoism is, do they have a theology or a central dogma? No. It's just a collection of what we might say is mythology or folklore, but that, since it's still being practiced, it's a spirituality, a religious belief.
Who do they pray to keep Godzilla from stepping on them?
Well, in the original movie, the original 1954 Gojira, there's a scene where a reporter comes to the village where Godzilla first shows up, and there's this old man, and he's saying, oh, we used to sacrifice virgins to the sea god so he wouldn't come and murder us, but now all we have is this dancing ritual. It's like he wanted to have the sacrifice. especially because in the scene before, there was a girl who was saying, oh, you old people and your old stories. He's like, I want to feed you to Godzilla.
I can't believe you had a straight answer to that question.
Hey, I've been watching these movies for, what, about 30 years now. So I'm not an expert, but I am a hardcore fan. So, yeah, I probably got an answer for you on everything, even if I have to make something up. But in this movie, the Godzilla Mothra King Ghidorah, or GMK for short, which I think we'll refer to it as GMK from now on.
I'm going to call it that Godzilla movie we watched for the podcast. That's still a shorter title than its actual title.
Well, in GMK, you'll notice there was some statues around where the monsters first showed up.
Yes, I saw those.
Those are called Jizo Bodhisattvas. In Buddhism, a bodhisattva is a person who has attained enlightenment but decides not to go to nirvana, which is, it's not like heaven, it's more like oblivion, where you don't have to go through the life cycle of death and rebirth anymore, which is all pain and suffering. You're free from that. But the enlightened person refuses that and stays in the life cycle to help other people reach enlightenment. And that's what the Jizo statue is. There's tons of these different statues. I'll post a link online for anyone who wants to peruse through the many varieties of Jizos. But I think they invented a kind for this movie. It kind of harbors souls for the guardian monsters, and it gives the guardian monsters a power-up.
Yeah, we didn't do the usual rigorous explanation of the plot for this movie.
Godzilla shows up.
Godzilla shows up, and then so do the guardian monsters to stop him.
Yeah.
And along the way, some people try not to get stepped on.
Yeah.
And then some people don't.
And then they blow Godzilla up in the end, and that's about it.
Yeah.
So no spoilers here.
Yeah.
Honestly, if you've seen one Godzilla, you can almost say you've seen them all.
I have to say, watching this movie, I was hard-pressed to figure out how there were 50 of them.
There's not quite 50. There's 29, I would say, if you count the American Godzilla. But almost.
Okay.
Godzilla's been around for 50 years, though.
Maybe that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, Godzilla's been around for 50 years. And you're like, how? I mean, because there are like straight remakes, like Godzilla and Mothra Battle for the Earth is pretty much a straight up remake of the original Godzilla versus Mothra. So you have like the same things over and over again. And in this one, you have an homage to the little fairies that show up, the little...
Like, I know about the fairies. Where were they in this movie?
There's a scene where Mothra flies overhead.
Uh-huh.
And there's two girls in white, and they kind of turn around and look, and that is sort of a meta reference to the two psychic girls who are in the Gamera trilogy, which was directed also by the same guy who directed this GMK movie, Shusuke Kaneko. I'm totally Godzilla geeking out, and Mike's giving me the stink eye over here. Like, get back on topic. All right, so...
Bodhisattva statues.
Yeah, they invented that kind of Jesus statue for this movie. So in true Toho fashion, where they usually rewrite the science books, and here they kind of rewrote the religion books and did sort of an anime version of the Japanese spirituality. And also, like, the idea of the guardian monster, the god who guards over Japan.
They just happened to recycle Mothra and Ghidra and the other thing.
Yeah, like, Ghidra, strangely enough, in this movie is a good guy. Typically, he's a bad monster from outer space who aids in alien invasion. Here, he's recast as the Millennium Dragon, which is another legend. You can read about it on Wikipedia. He's the eight-headed Millennium Dragon. There's also an anime out called Legend of the Millennium Dragon, which might give
this
you another
clue. This is fascinating.
I know, Mike, you're like... But the point is, there is this spiritual element that runs through. The monsters are recast. Rather than being the embodiment of nuclear power and annihilation, they're more spiritual creatures who are here warring over the Earth and protecting humanity from the bad forces that are out there. So that's what makes this movie more interesting than some of the other Godzillas, like, say, Godzilla versus Megalon, where it's just monsters and robots going at it. There's a deeper spiritual element that's in here.
And that's good, because after 30 movies of lizards versus robots, you need to add a little plot.
Strangely enough, the Mechagodzilla movies are my favorite.
Who doesn't love giant Japanese robots?
Yeah.
I'll stick to Optimus Prime. You can have Mechagodzilla.
Hey, now there's a showdown.
Yes.
We need to get Paramount and Legendary Pictures together.
Get the licensing people on that. Get the suits on that. Let's make it happen.
Yeah, Godzilla versus Transformers.
I'm picturing him driving down a Japanese street, stopping suddenly and transforming into a giant jump up to about Mechagodzilla's rib cage, or where his rib cage would be if he had bones, and throwing a giant punch right at him, and then, of course, Mechagodzilla would have to transform into a giant Decepticon spaceship or something. Can they do that? Can they transform?
Paramount and Toho, are you listening?
Yeah. All right, I think we're about done with episode 8 of Checking the Gate of Film and Religion podcast.
Final thoughts on Red State, Mike. Did you like Red State?
I'm never going to watch it again, I don't think.
Same here either. It was an interesting watch, and it was an interesting commentary on fundamentalism. Like, Dogma was a commentary on Catholicism, but I think I've watched Dogma maybe twice. I probably won't watch Red State again either. Final thoughts on GMK.
Hot chick, good monster action, didn't bore me, didn't know what it had to do with religion, but now I am educated, so I am better for having seen it. Probably not going to watch it again, though.
I'm probably going to watch it next week.
I believe that.
It's one of my favorites. So, and it's high on a lot of people's lists who are fans of Godzilla movies. So for next time, since I made Mike watch a Godzilla movie, Mike gets to pick the movie we do next time.
How about for next week, we talk about Indiana Jones. Not just one particular film, but overall, through the whole saga.
Okay, so we're talking about Raiders of the Lost Ark, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, and Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Exactly. They were talking about making a fourth one. I don't know whatever happened with that. Did you ever hear anything?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either. I'm glad that movie never got made.
No, it would be a total waste of time.
All right, dead horse has been beaten.
And we're going to resurrect the TV Corner, and for the Christmas season, since this will be coming out probably very beginning of January, end of December, we're going to talk about the Charlie Brown Christmas special.
It will be timely even after the holidays.
Yeah, so
it's a life lesson for year round.
Yeah, so check your local listings. Come back to us next month for a thrilling discussion.
It'll be entertaining as always.
And last but not least, we'd like to give a special thank you to Kyle Yount and his co-hosts Jeff and Heather over at the Kaiju Cast for giving us a shout-out on their last episode. Thank you very much. So, until next time, you could find us at www.ctgpodcast.com. Shoot us an email at ctgpodcast@yahoo.com. Twitter us at twitter.com/ctgpodcast, or search us on Facebook at Checking the Gate Podcast. Until next time, this is Robert saying keep the faith.
And this is Mike saying peace out.